Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti with my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, darling.
Ready for the explore.
Oh, wonderful. Well, tonight, the shadow continues with the familial chain of pain, my favorite subject.
I think I've been tapped pretty thoroughly in the soul.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, this is a biggie for everybody, and the reason it's so important, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and why it's so damn important to end it in this lifetime.
Yes.
And hopefully we're on the HBO radio, so using swear words here. Tonight I'd like to dedicate the show, and some of you are going to cringe, just hang in there, to all of our representatives in Washington, D.C., from the President to the Pentagon, and to flood them with the purest light, love, and compassion that we possibly can,
yes,
with no judgment.
Yes.
Now, this is a tough one, but it's incredibly important at this time, and mainly because we really can't see the future of our planet and our country right now because it hasn't been written. So our goal is to support the writing of our future from the perspective of love. And we have to remember that we are powerful beings and that what we send out there has impact. We may not know exactly what that impact is, but I can guarantee you it's positive. Every time we do something, I see the results. I know it to be true. And it's a lot easier to sit around and go, oh, boy, you know, Cheney may get indicted, but that's really not what we want to do here. Again, sending it in a neutral state, and that's the most important. Neutrality, pure light, love, compassion. We really need to be able to do this from the purest standpoint. The more that we complain and send negative energy, the more we feed it. And that's not our goal, none of us. So, off my soapbox here.
It's a good soapbox.
Well, it's, you know.
I agree entirely. It's wonderful.
All right. Thank you. Emails. We're trying to kind of filter away from reading emails in the future. They'll be included in the radio show announcements. So if you want to get your emails in the day before the show, not the night, the day before the show, and then I can include them right in the announcements. But tonight we have a wonderful one from our wonderful friend Squirrel. I can use her name because her writing is so clever. And because our shows, there were three of them that didn't get up and got up all of a sudden, so I know a lot of people have been listening to all of them. So I thought her email was incredibly appropriate. And I'm going to read it here. Dear wonderful ladies, I clearly agree with Veronica that the last bout of Mercury retrograde felt like living in a time warp. Didn't I resolve these issues years ago? Maybe I have, but it was as if the universe was just checking up on me. There were a whole slew of re's that popped up on my radar screen. Review, revisit, reflect, repel, rerun, rebuff, recoil, refrain, release, regift, regurgitate, and the like. Yes, they were all present at the same point during this retrograde period, and Jackie's statement that perhaps these repeat layers in our life appear almost out of nowhere to demonstrate just how far we have evolved and that we no longer want to reenact that scene. Exit stage left. Left turns only to escape. I question if one can truly let their guard down and be loving towards all beings. I've gotten myself into quite a few uncomfortable situations being open and loving. Can't we just be friends and get along? Sometimes it doesn't work out. What more or less happens is I retreat from that person and become more sequestered. Shields up. So let's just say, hypothetically, of course, wink, that I have the belief that when I am friendly towards a man, he ultimately wants to have sex with me. Where did I learn such a preposterous thought? I don't think it takes a highly evolved ET to figure that one out. One movie comes to mind, and that was When Harry Met Sally. There's a scene between Harry, Billy Crystal, and Sally, Meg Ryan. She puts those in for me because I never remember any movie star's name. And Sally states that she believes men and women can be friends. Harry disagrees and says that even if they are friends, the man will want to have sex with her. It goes on. Sally, what if the woman is not good-looking? Harry, we pretty much want to nail them, too. End of discussion. This seems to be a perplexing belief to dispel. A lot of dating, flirting, etiquette would need to be redone and renewed. Will I ever be able to redeem myself after this email? Smile. The reflective squirrel.
Well done.
What?
Well done, reflective.
Oh, that just so cute. So cute. Thank you always, Squirrel. You're a brilliant writer. We're just looking forward to your first book. And as soon as you can get that done, we'd all appreciate it. So on to the familial chain of pain and why we need to end it in this lifetime. And, you know, I see the chain of pain and the archetypes as the glue that hold the collective together, I mean, obviously. And in order to shift the collective, we have to end the chain of pain. So what is the chain of pain? Okay. Basically, and I've talked about this on other programs, but I'm going to go into it again. My perspective only, because I really more and more am coming to the conclusion that everything on this planet is subjective, and we are, each one of us, our own universe, and all experience for us is based on what we believe. And I have come to the conclusion, if you put two people in the same room, if you can get them to agree on everything, I am going to be amazed. So,
they've all been watching too much TV.
Too much what?
They've all been watching too much TV.
That may be the problem, Ronnie. That may be the problem. What the team basically, and this was kind of a co-creative experience for both of us. Most of you know that I lived in 13 foster homes. And I saw this as training. Unfortunately, at the time, I didn't know what it was for. But I knew it was preparation. And so I was ever vigilant in observing familial dynamics, even as a very tiny child. And I came to understand, obviously, I was recording all the information, you know, into the subconscious, whether I was consciously aware of it or not. And certainly it has, you know, come full circle in terms of being a wonderful pool of information to dip into. We project, when we go through separation from source, okay, from what we have experienced as being, first of all, knowing our connection to source or whatever name you choose to use, God, etc., Goddess, being on Earth in this particular density, we experience ourselves as separate. So consequently, we project that concept, the masculine, feminine, God and Goddess, onto Mom and Dad. And then we continue to project via Mom and Dad onto everyone else in our life. So we project Dad onto boyfriends, husbands, lovers, etc., and Mom onto girlfriends, lovers, wives. Then we attract relationships, generally speaking, where our partners are working out their dynamics with Mom, and we are working out our dynamics with Dad, depending on how the couple is structured. Or in same-sex relationships, which I have witnessed certainly because my son is gay, the, you know, dual working out of daddy-daddy. And we can also project Mom and Dad onto a partner, which is, if it's not complicated enough to begin with, let's just complicate it more. We are ever trying to achieve that oneness that we remember somewhere deep in our unconscious.
So So the word subjective often, you know, I love the word subjective. However, what bothers me is when we talk about this cellular, you know, these different drives, the drives to deal with the father, whatever. Where does subjective come in? To me, subjective means it's like my perspective, my point of view, right? But
well,
aren't these drives complex and they're really deep and it's...
They are, but, I mean, here's where I would say subjective comes in, Veronica.
Okay.
You can take, and certainly you grew up in a large family.
Yes, I did.
Okay. So...
With Catholicism, too.
I'm sorry?
I said with Catholicism, too.
Right. Okay. Now, everyone in your family experienced their life differently.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I'm assuming that when you all sit down to chat and you talk about different things that happened in your family. Now, and maybe I'm wrong. Sure enough, I'm talking to you and probably I'll get a different answer.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience is that if you take people, and I certainly see this with my own children, my son's perspective or subjective perspective of what happened growing up and my daughter's are totally different. You would swear they grew up in two totally separate households.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
Did you experience that with your siblings?
You bet. And now that we're a little bit older, quite a bit older, it's still like that.
Okay. So this is the subjective part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you call it cellular journey, and I love that expression. You are experiencing your own cellular journey, and therefore it is subjective. Based on what you come in with and your patterning and on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
you know, you are going to experience everything through your lens. Through your lens.
And the lens is very deep, and it works with the soul, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but it goes back to our whole relationship with a sense of separation and if you will, the top of the archetypal chain, which is the concept of God and Goddess. Okay, so how does that show up in our genealogy? Which this is something I'm mega fascinated with. And through the sessions, I see this constantly, and I know you do too, Ronnie.
Mm-hmm, I do.
So I want you to talk about your, I think it was your great-grandmother who showed up in the back seat of your car, okay? Because this is such a great example of exactly what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and she said very clearly.
Well, explain first that she came in etherically.
All right. She came in etherically in a spirit state, and I was on my way to see a psychiatrist. Because I knew I had to leave my husband, and I had a child, and I didn't know what to do, and I was going for professional, as we say, help. And all of a sudden, in my big car, there was this being sitting behind me, and she looked like my mom. And through further research, I found out who she was. I think she was a great-great-grandmother on my mother's side, and she said, "I am the one who installed or put into the family, into the women, this specific attitude." We all had kind of a skitterish defensiveness, sort of a fear thing. And she said, and I don't remember all the details of what it was that I was working on at the time, but anyway, she said, "I'm the one who installed that in the family, and I would like to be here to unhook it. I would like to help you release it."
And, now,
yeah, I love that.
That's powerful.
Yes, it is.
Okay, and it's a huge clue about the chain of pain.
Oh, I want to say one more thing, is I had chosen a psychiatrist who was supposed to be also quite intuitive. And when I walked into his office, he said, "Who have you brought with you?"
Exactly. Okay. So, great confirmation.
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, I'm just going to talk about, I'm going to take it a little bit different here and to another side. Okay. So, one of the things we see are in our genealogy, okay, that's an emotional imprint, okay, and it's been played out generationally, okay, Now, it went through, this was a great-grandmother, it went through all the generations, and here it came to you, and you're the one trying to stop it. That's the ending, that chain of pain.
Right. There you have it.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's the best example I can give, and I think it's brilliant.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to talk about my own mother for a minute, because she was such a dynamic being. And and as I was walking today, I was really thinking about this, and since I've done a lot of work this year around all of this and around my own healing, you know, I have been fascinated, because I had my children so young, to be able to, and my grandchildren are now adults, which is scary as hell.
And we're in our second youth.
Yes, exactly. And so in the work that I have done with my own mother and, you know, up in the healing room, and we had a group up there and she came through and so on, and, you know, certainly not the most friendly being. Obviously, even when she crossed over, it didn't change much. But what has been fascinating to me is to see how strong her imprint was. How her imprint went to me, to my daughter, and is now showing up in my grandchildren.
Hmm.
Now, you know, someone looking in from the outside could say, well, Jackie, that's the imprint from you. No, 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 no. There are certain imprints that came in from her. And she was way ahead of her time, very dynamic, very creative, very artistic, et cetera, et cetera. And I look, you know, for me, I was kind of an Oreo cookie. I was the cream in the middle. The attitudes, the things that she had towards me ended up being reflected back to me in my daughter. So my daughter was kind of the mini-me version of my mother, even though they had no connection and spent no time around one another.
And I say that my situation is similar. My daughter was very, in certain ways, like my mother.
Was very what?
Very, very like my mother. Without my daughter, it was very like my mother at times, even though they didn't know each other.
See, okay. So again, we're back to that chain of pain and the emotional imprint.
Right.
And that's, you know, now when scientists talk about genetics, I just, you know, it's all I can do to keep from cracking up laughing. Because I think that they have not gotten to the next level of this, which is the emotional imprint aspect of it. And my mother had a true belief that men were weak and that they needed to be controlled. And I mean, I can go on and on and on. And this desire to be successful, I mean, even down to the point of having fancy cars. She was she had a custom done car, you know, in the 50s, I guess it was. And of course lived in Hollywood when it was really glamorous, you know, and was dating movie stars and so on and so forth. And so I look at my own experience, and then I look down at my daughter, who on a social level, no matter where she goes, and right now she's doing things in Cancun, moves right into the upper echelon of the social interactions, and then, of course, through that business interactions, almost instantaneously. And it's fascinating to me to watch that play out. Now, what I was also fascinated with, and Ronnie, I'd love your comments on this,
Mm-hmm. Is
that the same things that my mother would say to me, the same form of disrespect and so on and so forth, were the same words that came out of my daughter's mouth. And yet they never met one another.
Interesting.
Maybe for, I would say my daughter was not around my mother more than a couple of days in her entire life.
Hmm.
So, you know, was this imprinted in, you know, can you claim that it's genetic? Not that strong. No.
I think that there's something about the genetics which accepted the drives of the soul to meet each other that way.
I would agree to that to a degree, yes. I think sometimes when you have these very powerful people, which obviously your great-grandmother was,
mm-hmm.
where they come in to make an imprint in the soul chain,
mm-hmm.
for whatever. And I had someone today who had an imprint, and this is something that she was working with someone else, and it came up, of chauvinism. And literally it was locked into her, and I can't remember from exactly who, an uncle or something way back, and how hooking into it, she had different members of the family, including her children, that one of her children that hooked into that whole thing of domination and chauvinism over her and continued to trigger those same lessons that obviously she was working with. Which makes me even more convinced that this lifetime is so incredibly powerful for all of us in terms of ending the chain of pain.
And so what you're saying is like in the soul we have these things that we're working on which vibrationally attract that in that response in others, especially those who are aligned with our lineage, right?
Absolutely.
And then trigger this reaction. Yeah, I really believe that that's
And then we, of course, attract others into our experience who are part of that same dynamic, who have agreed to play the role to continue. I mean, I'm seeing, and I'm sure you are too, for me, I see people coming in all the time who are carrying major archetypal imprints, who are playing out major issues on the planet, be it chauvinism, religion, the domination of religion, which, you know, falls into that same category of chauvinism. I mean, I can go on and on. Sexual abuse.
Power issues.
Yeah, major power issues and the repression of power with the feminine. And so, now, the reason it gets so confirmed for me is that in going back into some of their childhood, the imprints aren't there for their current emotional and psychological state. I have one person in particular that we have gone back over and over and over again. The imprints are not there in childhood.
I've seen it in certain people where they're born with it. I've seen, when I see the beginning of their life on this planet, I see these energy maps. And this one, I remember being born with a really deep abuse energy. And as far as I know, has never had abuse, but acts out that abuse syndrome, you know.
Acts it out on other people?
Acts it out in her own life, as if she's been a very abused person, but has not been. But
okay.
It's way in the soul imprint. It's already in her vibrational.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, with this particular person, where we were finally able to latch onto it was in a power retrieval where we went back into other lifetimes in the cosmos. And we were actually able to turn it there during a power retrieval. Now, were the details of that available? No, but we hit it. We hit the imprint, and it made a complete shift. This was, you know, one of my toughest people in terms of you know, and bless them because I can see how much they took on in order to, and because it's not only they took it on, but other members of their family.
Hmm. Because they've been perplexing ever since they were born?
No, not necessarily because they've been perplexing, but because they are working on a major piece of the collective that includes religion and male chauvinism and the repression of the feminine throughout history on the planet, that kind of stuff. And it's literally in the familial dynamic, and I've worked on 3 generations in this family, and it's in every one of them. But it's not in their history.
So it's kind of like a family chain of pain, but it's the soul kind of thing.
There you go. That's exactly what it is. It's soul agreement.
Mm-hmm.
to come in and work on a piece, and I see a lot of this, to work on a piece of the collective to try to shift it in a very dynamic way. These are big souls coming in to do this. I mean, that part I absolutely see. And it's racking to them. This is not easy stuff to take on. And many of the people out there listening tonight have had, you know, these same kinds of issues where they're like, I don't understand why it's so hard for me. You know, why this is so difficult. And many of you have taken on a much bigger piece than you understand. So you have your genealogy, you know, your, that you can look at. And generally people go back a couple of generations and you don't see it there. But as you said, Veronica, it's in the soul energy, or it's actually a decision. And see, when we talk about the soul energy, this is where it gets a little iffy, because if we've taken on these imprints prior to coming into the lifetime, including archetypal imprints, okay, it's really tough to read the soul energy as pure soul energy, because you've got what I would call add-ons. Are you with me?
Yeah, sort of a mosaic.
There you go. I love it when you fill in the words for me. And for those of you that know me out there, the more of this work I do, the less human language I have.
Well, you got to get multidimensional, so that.
I wish everybody would hurry up and become telepathic. This is getting a little difficult. Pretty soon I'm going to sound like, you know, run, Dick, run.
We'll just turn on our radio and sit by it, and that will be
there
enough.
You go. you know, we've kind of talked about this as the children then, our children come in and project back to us our unresolved issues with mom and dad. Now, this is a fascination to me, and I don't know, Veronica, if you've had this in your own familial dynamic, but certainly I have, and it was just absolutely my total challenge and conundrum.
You mean with your children reflecting back to you?
Well, my daughter specifically reflecting back to me, my mother,
Oh, yeah.
Which was a great gift because it hadn't been healed, and so until I could heal mom, it didn't allow my daughter to be different. But she continued to play out the role in order for me to really get it in this lifetime. And the more healed I am, the more that my relationship with her has completely shifted.
Wonderful. Well, I feel like that's true with my daughter as well. Maybe with some variation.
Right. Well, they don't need to play the role any longer when they no longer need to play the role. When we heal,
right,
those around us don't any longer need to play the supporting role to continue to keep putting it in our face.
It's almost like we're tethered to the family chain of pain, and then as we release the tethers, we get to flow more self. Where we design ourselves and our lives much differently, and that includes our children.
Well, we set them free, and I, you know, the example I would give also is my son, and because I've been so focused on changing the way I eat and health and things that, you know, I historically have not been. And it's just been a natural evolution for me in order to support the energies coming through me so that I can do this without, you know, feeling exhausted all the time. And my son is all of a sudden, well, they're waking him up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and here is the perfect television program special, you know, on some aspect of health that I've been telling him for years. He finally gets it, and he's down at Whole Foods looking at cleanses and doing all kinds of digestive aids and all. This is my son, who would have never listened to me in a million years doing it on his own. So, you know, I see that again as if I heal, those around me are impacted without me having to do anything.
That's because you, is going back to the familial chain of pain. You're just unhooking and unhooking and
there
unhooking.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to talk about another one that I found really interesting. Had a client the other day, and, you know, he was indicating that he thought that he was the reincarnation of his grandfather who had committed suicide and in the front yard shot himself in the eye. And he came in with that eye, the same eye that the grandfather shot himself in, being very weak and having problems with it. And during the session, you know, and sometimes there's so much going on that it can't all come through, but it bled around the edge that, no, this was, he was not a reincarnation. But, in fact, the imprint, the emotional imprint was so deep that it came through in his physiology. And so I emailed him to say, look, you know, this is the information that came through. It just didn't have time to come through with everything that was going on. And so, you know, I thought that that was very interesting, that it could actually come through physiologically from an emotional imprint, and not be, you know, and it would be easy to say, well, maybe I am that reincarnation, when in fact that was not the case. But the imprint was so deep that it actually transferred into the physiology.
And there is an alignment spiritually with his grandfather in another way, isn't there? So there's kind of a...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, this is a much lighter note, but my mother had a scar on her lip because of having hurt herself when she was young.
Yes.
And when I was little, I used to get that scar at times.
Well, that's interesting.
That is, and I just knew that I was upset. Usually when I was upset or I was worried about her, she was usually a rageaholic, you know what I mean? So, and I'm pretty much an empath.
Pretty much.
But literally, I'd have that scar on my lip. So I think that's pretty relevant.
Very relevant. Mm-hmm. Well, again, we're exploring out here into some wonderful, wonderful areas. And hopefully all of you listening out there, some of this is going to hit home for you. I think another piece of this, which I'm always fascinated, is how all of us, and there isn't a mother alive that doesn't remember doing this, saying things to our children that our parents said to us that we swore we would never do. And being in the middle of those words coming out of our mouth with the realization that I swore I would never say this, or I hated it when my mother said this to me. And yet we have all done it. I assume you've done it. I know I have, and a lot of people I've talked to have.
I have, yeah. And I've been horrified.
Yes, exactly.
Sometimes if I'm fast enough, I'll laugh and laugh and catch myself and say, I never, ever wanted to repeat that.
Now, you know, we have the other piece of this, which what I call the seesaw effect. Oh, wait a minute. Before we get to that, let's go back to, I had another one. You know, the scary part of this, too, Veronica, is that our children are going to play this out with their children and their because I am in a family of three generations, myself, my daughter, and my grandchildren. You know, I've been able to really watch this.
But wait a minute, Jackie. I have a grandson who's very like me. Isn't that a crack up?
Well, I actually see this quite a bit.
So it's like leapfrog.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I see this quite a bit.
Hmm.
I don't find that surprising at all.
But that is part of the familial chain, hopefully not of pain in this case. But.
No. No, but it can become, in other words, if you're not healed and your daughter's still carrying all this stuff, she can damage her son.
Right.
As you were damaged by your mother.
Right.
The goal here, of course, is to end the chain now, so that doesn't happen.
Right.
What I call the seesaw effect of family, of familial mentoring. And I'm always fascinated by this. And I see this passed on. My mother was obsessed with weight because we lived in Hollywood, and even though I was in foster homes most of the time, I did have times when I would live with her. And so it was very, very important to her that I was beautiful and tiny, and, you know, she took me around to all of the Hollywood agents, and, you know, she wanted to be a stage mother in the biggest sense of the word. So I spent a lot of time locked in my room, sometimes weeks at a time, and was fed minimal amounts of food. It was her diet program. weighed in every morning. You know, it was, I mean, this was so mommy dearest. And, I mean, I really look back at it now and kind of giggle about the whole thing. So I, as a result of that, would never say a word to my daughter about her weight. I mean, to me, if, you know, she could gain 10 pounds overnight and I wouldn't say a word. I went to the extreme of not wanting to damage her by saying anything about her weight. Now, was I really doing her a favor? Well, no, not really, because there wasn't, you know, a balance in there. Now, what's been fascinating to me is if her kids gain a pound, boy, she's on them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Huh? Well, it is interesting.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, and I have a granddaughter that if you mention the word weight, and she's tiny, she goes ballistic. She gets so self-conscious. I mean, some little boy told her that she had ugly legs when she was a little girl, and she never wore shorts. It, to this day, she doesn't wear shorts. And she has gorgeous legs.
Oh, my.
But that's how sensitive. So, you know, we were talking about grandchildren and your grandson being like you. My granddaughter carries the sensitivity that I had. And I find this very interesting. Again, part of that chain of pain, that emotional imprint being carried on. Not verbally, not reinforced in any way other than the imprint of what I went through, okay, may look as though it skipped a generation. But in fact, my granddaughter, you know, I mean, is they're carrying it now. My daughter has absolutely no qualms about, you know, she seems to be totally comfortable in her body, you know, walks around in her underwear, et cetera, she just has a whole different attitude. Whereas my granddaughter, I mean, if she gains a pound, she's a nutcase.
So if we were to be clearer, like, for example, your granddaughter has got your sensitivity, and I'm thinking that by the same token, if we can unhook the negative aspects of, you know, the way our moms were, for example, we can actually take that sensitivity with our grandchildren to a much higher place.
Absolutely.
Much younger.
Absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. Well, and I'll go into another piece of that. Sexual freedom and promiscuity. Now, my mother, I always perceived her as, I mean, she was an incredibly beautiful woman, and she was a very, She was very comfortable in her sexuality, let's put it that way. And I have always played with it in terms of, you know, I've always, you know, dressed kind of sexy and so on and so forth. But basically, now most people will never believe this, I have a shy side. And
I believe it, Jackie.
Well, that's only because you know me, Veronica. And, I mean, not when I'm in a relationship, but, you know, I basically my, you know, being kind of, you know, I don't know how you put it, I kind of kept people at a distance, so I was not, people thought I was promiscuous, but I absolutely was not, and which was kind of a real paradox. My daughter, on the other hand, has this incredible comfort with her sexuality, and I mean, she thinks about sex like a man, and I'm just fascinated by it.
For her.
Well, it's just, so again, we have this generational skip, which, you know, I find really, really interesting. And I managed to attract men in my life who became sexually inept because I think that I had a fear that I would be controlled by my sexuality. Which I perceived that my mother was because of the way that she did other things, so I won't go into details. And, I mean, now I've come into balance with all of that, but I'm just fascinated these little nuances and how they play out in the chain of pain. Um, Now, and I'll take it a step further, because I was always hoping to get laid in my marriage. I mean, I spent my whole life waiting for this, planning for it, orchestrating it. And, you know, it was actually very, very humorous. And I think what happened as well, that my daughter then decided that she was going to take the bull by the horns and would never have to deal with that. Hmm. So, you know, that may be the flip side of it as well. But I do think it's funny. So how do we end the chain of pain? I mean, basically, you know, what steps can we all take to do as much as possible to end the chain of pain? Well, you know, the first one is to work on self-esteem. And, you know, believe me, I get no spiff from Lazarus, but Lazarus's tape, the original tape series that he put out, self-esteem, so important, brilliant tools to work with. Because self-esteem is one that, you know, most people do not understand at all. And how we get it, where it comes from, because it comes from us.
I'll tell you something. I've noticed with my father and his sister and so on and so forth, they're all really good-looking, smart people that have done well, but they all have pretty precarious self-esteem.
Well, and again, you know, this bleeds forward, again, this imprint.
You bet.
So self-esteem is really something that you give to yourself.
Right.
It is not, if false esteem is what you believe, what you get from other people, feedback you get from other people that makes you think that you're okay. So validation from others. Real esteem comes from you. Validating you. Honoring you. Loving you. Authentically. You know, and that tape by Lazarus, and it's Lazarus.com, Lazarius.com, it's a brilliant tape. And, of course, I would say the companion with that is anything on the negative ego, because that's the other thing that gets in the way.
Do you think the negative ego is definitely related to the familial chain of pain? Meaning... Do we share it with our parents, or?
Yes, of course. If we're beat up, in most cases, by family, the negative ego comes in, or the ego comes in to protect us. That's pretty much what happens, and it's really easy then to start giving everything to the negative ego. And the negative ego is the one that tells you you're not enough, you'll never be enough, you're not good enough. It's the one that keeps you down. It not only gives you false esteem and tells you you're better than anybody else, it also tells you you'll never be anything. So the negative ego is the one that you do battle with. I mean, you know, I've always said that, you know, the temptation of Christ in the desert, you know, when he went into the desert to pray, you know, I've always said was the negative ego. It wasn't the devil. It was him overcoming the negative ego, which was trying to control the outcome.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
And this is the one, you know, and I think for a lot of people, the downside of the negative ego, which is that you'll never be enough, you aren't enough, who do you think you are, is what immobilizes people and keeps them from stepping forward to make the changes. Because the negative ego, who is out to win right now, guys, will convince you that you can't do it. But get healed. I don't care how you get healed. I don't care what modality you use. Get healed. Our healing is going to stop the chain of pain.
So if you're working on something, Jackie, would we recommend that people who are listening tonight go back inside themselves, go back and ask, wear a certain quality, whether it's sexual inhibition or self-pity or something, where it came from, and ask if can't we ask and experience where the relationship is in the family, or whether it really is familial pain.
Absolutely, and you know, it may not, again, it may not show up in a place that, you know, that we can access, but certainly you know, and I really recommend this to everybody, especially now because things are moving so quickly.
Oh, my.
Is before you go to bed at night, ask for insight. Ask for help. Ask for guidance. Trust that you're going to wake up with knowing, with understanding that it'll show up somewhere in your next day.
Mm-hmm.
Ask to be shown it so clearly you can't possibly miss it, and then pay attention to the signs. Healing goes, this is the second one, healing goes throughout time and space. You know, just to make things more complex, it's really time that we realize that what we're doing here in this lifetime is having such a far-reaching impact. Because we're in the process of ascension now, okay, we are impacting all of our lifetime, not only the current lifetime that we're in, okay, and the familial chain of pain, but all of our lifetimes by what we're doing. The changes we're making here are changing other lifetimes,
mm-hmm,
because they're not linear. They're in a different timeline. All experience is simultaneous. It's happening in a different timeline. And if you took a spiral, okay, a big, huge spiral, and you put all these lifetimes around that spiral isn't moving in time, but the lifetimes are being experienced around that spiral. They are just different timelines. So what we do now is having that impact. Huge. It's huge. And this is why I say any investment you make in your healing will be supported by your guides, your higher self, everything around you. Because everybody on both sides of the veil is counting on you right now. And your children are the beneficiaries of the healing work you do. Not only are your children, but your parents, your grandparents, and on, aunts, uncles, et cetera, et cetera.
It's fascinating, isn't it, that as it goes down through the familial chain of pain, it also reverberates out to all the people that we magnetize into our world, and as we change that, that changes all of that as well, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And it will change the people that you attract.
Mm-hmm.
The more healed you become, the more you will find that you will attract, and certainly we are all having these experiences where we can go anywhere and ask for help or some little thing, and people just go out of their ways to do all kinds of lovely things for us, and we're just finding our lives becoming more and more magical. Every experience, I mean, it's not an ego thing. I just expect that everything is going to be lovely. I mean, I just literally, and especially right now, the energies are so supportive of that feeling.
And rapidly so. We saw Bashar on Monday, and Bashar that you've mentioned fairly often is
yes,
Channel B.
Wonderful Bashar.
Yeah. One of the things he said I just wanted to throw in here is that Mother, Father, God, or Creator Spirit really loves the change. Our changes are the thing that really registers the most with Spirit and with the universe.
There you go.
I love that.
That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And it is having far-reaching impact. You are making a difference. Everybody is making a difference. Believing that you are powerful enough through your intentions to impact more than just yourself. And this goes back to the beginning, what I said about negative ego and self-esteem. This is so important. You know, I often think about my aunt who, you know, really struggled in this lifetime, you know, with esteem. And I feel her around me with all the work I'm doing, and both personally and, you know, in my daily life. And I can feel her healing. And it thrills me. It absolutely thrills me. Be conscious all the time. I mean, you know, I know it's exhausting, guys, but, you know, at this juncture, we just don't have the luxury of not being conscious. And boy, I'm getting this one constantly. Being conscious all the time, conscious of what I think, conscious of what I say, you know, not having the luxury of letting my mind wander into areas that, because thoughts are manifesting somewhere. And, you know, when I walk is when I really, I'll get it and some little thing will pop into my mind and I'll think, whoa, where'd that come from? Oh, my gosh. And I look at, I was walking tonight and an old situation popped up in my mind about a person who, bless them, triggered mother. And instead of getting angry, you know, because there was different things that I saw in this, I immediately blessed them and thanked them for the fact that they were willing to play that role and really, you know, did something that completely just shattered me. But it was an opportunity for me to go back to deeper levels of healing with my mother. And I really had to go back and thank them in my own, you know, consciousness for the role that they played. Now, this is somebody that I will not have in my life experience because they have their own issues around healing and things that they need to work on. And until they have done that, they're just not, they're fairly dangerous for me in my life experience. And so I choose not to have them around me. But that doesn't mean that I don't bless them. Pay attention to the triggers with your children. And God, this is big. And really trace those triggers back. And I, you know, I look at this one all the time. What is it that they do that hurts us or aggravates us or angers us? What is it? Because that'll take us right back through the chain in a minute. And if it's not your children, then parents, if you still have parents in your life, same thing. And control. Let go of control. Believing that you can control your children or your parents is an illusion. A big one. Now, you can have boundaries, okay, and enforce your boundaries. That's a healthy thing. But that's different than control. Control incorporates manipulation, you know? Wouldn't you agree, Ronnie?
Yeah, I agree, yeah. I was just thinking that it's really, you can't even control your own subconscious. Or we don't even want to control our own subconscious, do we?
Well,
we want to release it, or we want to release things from it.
I'm going to read this because I think this is really one. It's called On Establishing Control. It's short. The key to establishing control is to spend a part of each day completely alone. Use the time to review your feelings and concerns to develop where you deeply understand that nothing is real. The old Taoist sages who understood the importance of maintaining control at all times, and we're talking of themselves, and avoiding confrontation, taught their students that their life is like a stick floating down a river and that interpersonal strife snags it, bringing your progress to a standstill. Confrontation fuels the ego and strengthens the power of the subconscious over your affairs.
Oh, wow.
The sage walks away. The fool stands and fights. I thought that was really profound.
Hmm. Who wrote it?
I have no idea. Somebody sent it to me today with no reference to, you know, who had written it or whatever. It just, I thought it was very profound.
It is very profound. I want to think about it for a while.
Yeah, I know. I had to also. Uh-huh. The sage walks away, the fool stands and fights.
I think you need to put that in your latest newsletter.
Yeah, okay, I will. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Yeah, it's excellent. I really like it.
Well, and again, this is going back to the whole thing of neutrality. And I've had a really wonderful opportunity with my son, who is, you know, moving his father and getting him out of an old situation. And my son has, you know, turned his whole life around, and he's moved, you know, to a new city, and the opportunities are coming at him so fast. And he calls me every couple of hours, and he'll say, "Listen, you little witch, would you just leave me alone for a little while?" And he went there and thought that he didn't like it, and he was going to move all the way across the country instead. And I said, "Well, just give it a couple of days. You know, just wait and see." And the opportunities are flying at him. Things, the energy is supporting him right now, and everything is shifting. And he was looking for a job and got a job overnight. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing to see what's unfolding in his life. And just amazing. But what has happened, and I said to him, you know, how did I end up being your consultant for your dad after 20 years of being divorced from him? And I found myself really compassionate, and I've been saying, well, maybe if you approach him this way, and maybe if you do this, and maybe this will be helpful. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Wait a minute, didn't I sign off 20 years ago? And my son and I laughed about it. But what's wonderful is it's been such a healing for me, because I have found such deep compassion for my husband, and wanting him to see him start, see him as well as my son, start a whole new life and find a whole new level of happiness. And so it's been a real interesting kind of group healing for us in terms of that familial chain of pain.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really been interesting.
And my guys keep saying about exes and people in the background, just love them. Just love them.
Absolutely.
Sounds like what you're doing.
Well, and I agree with your guys. I am finding that my levels of compassion for everybody have changed so dramatically. And, you know, that's why if something comes up that is, triggers any kind of a negative feeling, I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, where'd that come from?
Great.
And immediately go in and review it and assess it and find out why it's come up, what's the trigger, what's there, what do I still need to heal in there, and then I can release it and feel really good about it. Because that's really the key right now, I think, as your guide said, just love them, and that means love everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're up on the hour, I think. And Veronica, talk about, how was your radio show this week?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was Gay Hendricks, and we were talking about Five Wishes, a book that he's put out. But we haven't got time now, or I'd chat a bit about it. Hey, Jackie, are you going to come on to my show, Paradigm Shifters, very soon?
I will. You and I will talk about that.
All right.
And
my show on Tuesday is Radiance by Design, and it's a call-in show. I want to talk to you about you. So let us know how you're unhooking from the familial chain of pain and so on. And it's Tuesday at 4 o'clock West Coast time. And my Paradigm Shifter slot is empty for a good reason. I'm going to fill it, but I don't know who it's going to be yet. Maybe it'll be you, Jackie.
Maybe. All right. And your website, Ronnie?
VeronicaEntwistle.com. That's Veronica Entwistle, EntwistleE.com.
Beautiful. And, of course, ours is ethealing.com. We love you all. Thank you. The shows will now be up on a regular basis. No more waiting for the archives.
Wonderful.
And, again, I say to everyone, a piece of every one of you is in Ronnie and I, and a piece of Ronnie and I are in every one of you. We really are all one. It can be no other way. We love you so much. We thank you for tuning in. It's a joy for us to be with you. Thank you, and have a blessed week. Work on that chain of pain, everybody. And Ronnie, I love you. You know that.
Yeah, I love you too.
You're the best.
And many blessings. It's wonderful talking with you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.